From WXXI, you're listening to Stage Notes, the music of Broadway and more, and I'm your host, Robert Hammond.
End of May or early June, this picture-perfect afternoon we share. Drive the winding country road, grab a scoop at a la mode, and then we're there. An open field that's framed with trees, we pick a spot and shoot the breeze like buddies do. Quoting songs by our favorite bands, telling jokes no one understands except us two. And we talk and take in the view. All we see is sky for forever. We let the world pass by for forever. Feels like we could go on for forever this way. Two friends on a perfect day. We walk a while and talk about the things we'll do when we get out of school. Bike the Appalachian Trail, or write a book, or learn to sail. Wouldn't that be cool? There's nothing that we can't discuss, like girls we wish would notice us, but never do. He looks around and says to me, there's nowhere else I'd rather be, and I say, me too. And we talk and take in the view. We just talk and take in the view. All we see is sky for forever. Let the world pass by for forever. Feels like we could go on for forever this way. Friends on a perfect day. And there he goes, racing toward the tallest tree. From far across a yellow field, I hear him calling, follow me. There we go, wondering how the world might look from up so high. One foot after the other, one branch then to another. I climb higher and higher, I climb till the entire sun shines on my face. And I suddenly feel the branch give way. I'm on the ground, my arm goes numb. I look around and I see him come to get me. He's come to get me. Everything's okay. All we see is sky for forever. We let the world pass by for forever. Buddy, you and I for forever this way. Friends, true friends, on a perfect day.
Thanks for tuning into Stage Notes today. From the original Broadway cast recording of Dear Evan Hansen, that was For Forever, featuring Ben Platt. My prediction is that musical will win for Best Musical, and Ben Platt's going to take home the Tony Award for Best Lead Actor in a Musical. What an honor it is to announce today that Ari Shapiro is my guest in recognition of LGBT Pride Month. On Monday, it will be the first anniversary of the Pulse Club shooting in Orlando that he covered with such compassion. He'll talk about that and his reporting it as a gay man. He'll be up in just a few minutes. But first, here's Broadway megastar Megan Hilty singing Who You Are from Songs from Smash.
Hi, I'm Megan Hilty, and you're listening to Stage Notes with Robert Hamm.
I stare at my reflection in the mirror. Why am I doing this to myself? Losing my mind on a tiny error. I nearly left the real me on the shelf. No, 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 no.
From the CD Songs from Smash, that was Megan Hilty singing Who You Are on the special LGBT Pride edition of Stage Notes. It's great to have Ari Shapiro on Stage Notes today. You know that name from All Things Considered. He is a host on NPR's All Things Considered. As I was going around the station today telling people I was interviewing you, everybody was like, oh my God, you're interviewing Ari Shapiro?
Aw, thanks.
And I asked, well, what would you ask him if you were interviewing him?
What did they say?
And four people said, Ask him what the average day in the life of Ari Shapiro is.
Oh, well, that's fun. So the first thing I have to explain is that I don't host All Things Considered every day because we have four hosts of the show. It's me, Audie Cornish, Robert Siegel, and Kelly McEvers. And one of the nice things about it is that two of us host any given week, which means we each pretty much have 2 weeks hosting and then two assignment weeks. So during our assignment weeks, we can go off and do big reporting projects that we can bring back that will air when we're hosting. So we're not kind of like handcuffed to the studio day in and day out, week after week. So on an assignment day, there really is no typical schedule, but on a hosting day, it is pretty regimented. I generally get into the office at 8:30 in the morning, and I have coffee dates from 8:30 to 9:30, because when I started hosting, I realized that the day just runs away, and there is no time to have any conversations with anybody about anything other than that day's show, except for that hour from 8:30 to 9:30. So during that hour, I will have coffee with somebody, I will read into the news, I will come up with interesting story ideas, hopefully interesting, and then at 9:30 every day we have our editorial meeting, where everybody on the show sits around the table, pitches stories, and kind of decides what's going to be on that day's show. The meeting breaks up around 10:15, and between 10:15 and 4 o'clock, it's just interview after interview, research, reading, digging into whatever I'm doing for the show that day. And then from 4 to 6, I'm sitting in the studio doing the show live. And then on days when I am the late host on duty, then from 6 to 10 p.m., I hang out either at the office or at home so that if there's breaking news until 10 p.m., we can update the show for the Midwest and West Coast feeds. And that's a day in the life.
You ride your bike to work every day.
Yeah, I do. I live really close to the office. And so even though we do have like showers and a fitness center here, I typically ride my bike to work in my suit or whatever I'm wearing that day. A friend recently, actually over the weekend, I ran into a friend and I was out. It was a Saturday night. I was wearing like a t-shirt and shorts and flip-flops. And my friend was surprised. And I said, "Why are you surprised?" And he said, "Because the last time I saw you, you were on your bicycle in a suit carrying a pile of other suits," which was actually true because I was coming from the dry cleaners having just picked up a bunch of suits. So I was like, okay.
You went to
enough.
The dry cleaners?
Yeah.
That must have been hard.
You know, right? I ride every day just to get around, to do all my errands. And so I'm used to riding with one hand on the handlebars and the other hand carrying what I do have bags on the back of my bike. So when I do like my grocery shopping, the groceries go in the bags on the back of the bike. But if you're picking up laundry from the dry cleaners, you sort of need to hold that in your arm. But I always wear a helmet. I'm very responsible. I obey traffic laws.
Welcome back to Stage Notes. I'm Robert Hammond. My guest today is Ari Shapiro, and he'll be up again in just a few minutes. This is off the CD Broadway for Orlando, and the song What the World Needs Now is Love, and it features some of the biggest Broadway stars, including Arga McDonald, Idina Menzel, Sarah Jessica Parker, Nathan Lane, Brian Stokes Mitchell, and Bernadette Peters.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Sides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last, enough to last till the end of time. What the world
From the CD Broadway for Orlando, that was What the World Needs Now is Love. And I'm happy to welcome back my guest, Ari Shapiro, a host on NPR's All Things Considered. As you know, that June is LGBT Pride Month, and on Monday, just 2 days from now, it will be the first anniversary of the massive shooting at the Orlando nightclub Pulse.
Right, right.
49 people were killed, 53 were wounded. And you covered that horrendous event brilliantly.
Yeah, thank you.
And compassionately. As a gay man, did that affect your reporting at all?
You know, I had a conversation while I was there with one of my colleagues who is on the Code Switch team, Adrian Florido, who was also in Orlando. And he was sort of reporting a bunch of stories from the perspective of the Latino community, and because it was Latin night at Pulse. And so a lot of the people mm-hmm. who were killed were Hispanic. And so I was sort of doing stories from coming from the direction of LGBT people, although not exclusively. I also did a story about the youngest victim, Akira Murray, who was this 18-year-old African-American young woman who just graduated from high school and was there with her cousin. But I was doing a lot of stories about kind of the LGBT perspective, and Adrian was doing a lot of stories about kind of the Latino perspective. We were in the same workroom one day filing our stories at the same time and kind of musing about, language barriers aside, if we were both fluent in Spanish and English equally, whether I would have been able to report the same stories he had or he would have been able to report the same stories I had, or whether for him being a Latino person, for me being a gay person, we brought something different to the stories. And I think, you know, neither one of us likes to think of ourselves as practicing identity journalism per se, but I do mm-hmm. think that the life you have lived influences your approach to a story. And I think we both sort of concluded that in one way or another, we did report stories differently, he because he's Latino and me because I'm gay, in a way that might be hard to put your finger on, but somehow has to do with the life that you've lived informing the journalism you're practicing.
The theme from HBO's miniseries Angels in America, composed by Thomas Newman. Here again is Mr. Ari Shapiro.
As I was going down to Orlando, I messaged a friend and I said, years and years ago, had such a positive experience at an Orlando gay bar where I went on like a Monday night and it was empty and I became friends with these two bartenders and the following night was their night off. And so we all went out together on their night off. And then I left my jacket at one of the places we went. And after I had left Orlando, because I was there on a reporting trip, again, this was years and years ago, they actually went back and got my jacket and sent it to me in the mail, which was, you know, so nice, these people I had just met. So a few days into my reporting on the Pulse shooting, I was just telling that story to somebody who we were getting ready for an interview. This guy's name was Billy Maines, and he was the editor of the LGBT paper there, Watermark. And he said, oh, what was the bar? And I said, oh, well, it was years ago, so I'm sure it's closed. I don't remember the name of it. And he said, well, describe it to me. What did it look like? Because I've lived in Orlando for a long time. I'll be able to tell you what it was. And I said, well, you sort of walked into the bar, and to your right, there was this sort of sleek white cocktail bar area. And to your left, there was sort of like this dark dance club area. And he said, that was Pulse. And it wasn't until that point in the reporting process that I realized that I had been to Pulse and that these bartenders who I had had this lovely experience with were Pulse bartenders. And I ended up tracking one of them down. And at the end of the week of reporting on the shooting, I did sort of like a personal essay in which I called up this guy who now lives in Chicago and no longer works at a bar, but this guy named Nathan, who I had met all those years ago, who remembered me, and sort of connecting with him over this shared experience that we had had all these years earlier in this place that suddenly was so, you know, in the news and on everybody's mind.
When I was doing some research about you, I actually came upon that story. And Nathan said, we saw you there by yourself, and he's talking about Pulse, and wanted to make sure you were, you know, part of the group.
Yeah.
Recalls a former bartender at Pulse nightclub.
Yeah.
And I really was struck when he said, we didn't want you to feel alone. And then he went on to say that gay bars are a place where you can feel comfortable and be yourself. Talk a little bit about that.
I had been working in Miami at the time. I was there on a 9-month contract for NPR, filling in for our Florida correspondent who was on an academic year fellowship. And so I was reporting a story in Orlando. And now all these years later, I don't remember what the story was. But, you know, after I was done working, it's like you go out. You don't know anybody in Orlando, so you go out to the local gay bar, you have a drink, and it happened to be such a quiet night that the bartenders were free and chatty, and we really ended up becoming friends. That was my personal experience in that moment. I know that for a lot of people, especially if their families aren't accepting of them or if they live in a community where there's widespread homophobia, the gay bar can really be a place of refuge, really a sanctuary, a place of safety, emotional and physical, which is one reason that the shooting at Pulse, beyond just being a horrific mass shooting, felt to so many people like an assault on what is supposed to be a sanctuary of sorts.
You're listening to Stage Notes.
Don't be afraid.
Rochester's own Renee Fleming, a graduate of the Eastman School of Music, performing You'll Never Walk Alone from the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Carousel. Welcome back to Stage Notes. I'm Robert Hammond, and all things considered host Ari Shapiro talks a little bit more about gay bars.
I know that wherever I go, there is a gay bar, and that if I dropped into it, there would be some kind of sense of familiarity, and it's a place where you can let your guard down. That's not to say that wherever I'm reporting, I kind of seek out the gay bar per
right.
se, but there is a sort of, for better and for worse, commonality where you see the same types, you hear the same music, you have the sense of mm-hmm. recognition.
Do you think the person who did the shooting knew that June was LGBT Pride Month and did that at Pulse because it was June?
I would have no way of knowing. I try not to psychoanalyze or sort of mm-hmm. speculate on motives. That's just, I'm in the business of telling what we know and not wondering
right.
about what we don't.
You got married to your husband in 2004,
yeah.
and you had the overture to Candide.
Yeah, we walked down the aisle
for
to
your
it.
Processional. That must have been unbelievable. And why did you decide to choose that wonderful, glorious
piece?
I
think the only answer anyone needs, why did you choose that piece of music, is just listen to the music. I mean, it's such a great, I mean, just listen to the music answers that question itself. It's such a great, I mean, from the opening bars of that, like, trumpet fanfare, all, it's I love it. I love it. Also, and this isn't why we chose it, but if you want to get deep, I mean, the themes of Candide about going from the sort of like starry-eyed best of all possible worlds to the we're neither pure nor wise nor good, we'll do the best we know, we'll build our house and chop our wood and make our garden mm-hmm. grow, the sort of like, you know, from the cockeyed optimist to the clear-eyed realist, it's just like so beautiful. I wouldn't say that Candide is necessarily one of my favorite shows, but certainly it has some of my favorite music.
Thank you.
what Ari Shapiro and his husband walked down the aisle to when they got married, the overture to Candide, performed by the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by the composer himself, Leonard Bernstein. Ari talks now a little bit about his Tony predictions. Now that you opened that door, what are some of your favorite shows?
Well, reaching back, I think Sondheim is wonderful. In the present day, I like Sondheim's heirs, whether that's like Adam Gettle or Pasek and Paul. I think right now, at this moment on Broadway, there's just such an incredible range of really phenomenal stuff happening. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any Tony predictions?
Bench Pasek is a friend of mine, so I have to confess to being in the tank for Dear Evan Hansen.
It's going to win. That's my prediction. I'm writing a blog about it. It's definitely going to win.
And also,
I think
Ben Platt will win Best Act. Oh. Is just staggering. Doing it once ever would be staggering. Doing it 8 times a week is superhuman.
Oh my gosh. And he's so good.
He is so good, and he is so lovely as a human being, and he is so deserving. Yeah, absolutely. I also think Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet is some of the mm-hmm. most ingenious direction of any Broadway production I've ever seen. The fact that Rachel Chafkin made this experimental piece work in this big Broadway proscenium stage theater and just completely transform it is pretty incredible.
And if anyone were to win for best role as a leading actor in a musical, I would think Josh Groban because of the star power, but I still think Ben Platt's going to win.
I agree with you. Having seen both of them, I think, yeah.
Why don't you trace it on my hand or make a song? Inside you, this I know. It's like a melody, like there you go just now. Say it somehow, somehow you can show me. Say it somehow, any way you can. You know me, you are good. Oh, you are good, you are good to me. Sound of touch me. I think I hear the sound of rapping out around me. Shout and dance and breathe. Or say it silently.
Tell me. Somehow, somehow you can show me. I know that you know me.
Will you marry me?
No. It must be mine to ask it.
Ask it then.
I wish to be the one to decide.
Decide.
Will you?
Yes.
Will you marry
me? Yes.
You are good to me. I know the sound of touch me. I think I hear the sound of rapping.
from the original Broadway cast recording of The Light in the Piazza. That was Kelly O'Hara and Matthew Morrison performing Say It Somehow. The glorious music from the musical is written by Adam Gettle, who Ari just mentioned. He's also the grandson of Richard Rodgers. Now, you saw this wonderful show you did a piece on All Things Considered, called Teeny Sweeney.
It's also called Shop Sweeney. It's also called Harrington's Sweeney.
Do tell.
It's a production of Sweeney Todd that I first heard about when I lived in London a couple years ago. I was based there with NPR's Foreign Desk, and it was a small, basically like a community theater company called the Tooting Players, that they think of themselves as a site-specific theater company, but really they just like can't afford a theater space. Well, both are true. And so they decided to mount a production of Sweeney Todd in Harrington's Pie Shop, which is the oldest continually operating pie shop in London. It's been around for about a century, and it would serve pies during the day, and at night they would mount this production of Sweeney Todd, and it seated, I don't know, something like 30 people in the pie shop. And Cameron McIntosh, the great West End and Broadway producer, came to see it, mm-hmm. fell in love with it, invited his good friend Stephen Sondheim to see it, who fell in love with it. Cameron McIntosh then said, you know, I've got this tiny little shuttered disco on the West End if you want to remount the production there. So they moved this production of Sweeney Todd to this tiny little space in the West End where they completely recreated Harrington's Pie Shop, and they brought in Harrington's Pies. And then it transferred to New York, where they did it at this very small space in the Village downtown. And the reason I went and did a story about it is that the guy who they hired to make the pies for the show was the former White House pastry chef, Bill Yassas. And I just thought this idea of going from baking for the Obamas to creating these meat pies for this show about cannibalism was so funny and interesting to me. And I knew that he was a great interview. So I went up and I spent the day with him in his bake shop as he was making the pies, and then went and saw the show. And it's very, very intimate, really terrifying in the way that the best productions of Sweeney Todd are, where it really feels like a horror play. And one of the funniest things he said to me about it was, he made chicken pot pies, and there was also a vegetarian option. And I said, why chicken? You know, if I were to imagine humans ground up into meat pies, chicken isn't what I would think of. And he said, well, you know, when people talk about tasting unfamiliar or exotic meats, they often say, what does it taste like? Tastes like chicken. Oh. Yeah.
I have got to see that show.
When I saw it, Mrs. Lovett and Sweeney were played by the original London performers. Now, Carolee Carmello has taken over in the role of Mrs. Lovett, and Norm Lewis, both great legendary Broadway performers. Norm Lewis is playing Sweeney. And so I haven't seen them in the roles, but they're great actresses, singers, performers. And in such a small space like that, it's very intense. It's great.
If I ever need a fill-in, will you come here and do the show? Because I think you actually are better at this Broadway
no,
stuff than me.
No. I mean, I'm honored to be asked, but you have qualifications that I could only dream of.
A customer! Wait, what you rush, what you hurry? You gave me such a fright, I thought you was a ghost. Half a minute, can't you sit you down, sit? All I meant is that I haven't seen a customer for weeks. Did you come in for a pie, sir? Do forgive me if me head's a little fake. Ugh, what is that? But you think we are the plague? From the way that people keep affording, no you don't. Heaven knows I try, sir. Ugh, but there's no one comes in even to inhale. Right you are, sir, would you like a drop of ale? Mind you, I can't hardly blame them. These are probably the worst pies in London. I know why nobody cares to take them. I should know, I make them, but good. The worst pies in London. Even that's polite. The worst pies in London. If you doubt it, take a bite. Is that just disgusting? You have to concede it. It's nothing but grasping. You drink this, you'll need it. The worst pies in London. And no wonder with the price of meat what it is. When you get it, never thought I'd live to see the day. Men are think it was a treat, finding poor animals what are dying in the street. Mrs. Mooney has a pie shop, does a business, but I've noticed something weird. Lately all the neighbours' cats have disappeared. I've to hand it to her, what I call enterprise, popping pussies into pies. Wouldn't do in my shop. Just the thought of it's enough to make you sick. And I'm telling you, the pussycats is quick. Now denying times is hard, sir. Even harder than the worst pies in London. Only lard and nothing more. Is that just revolting, all greasy and hand, and the worst spies in London. Ah, sir, times is hard, times is hard.
Five-time Tony Award-winning Angela Lansbury, who was the original Mrs. Lovett, and of course that was the original Broadway cast recording, and she sang The Worst Spies in London. Out Magazine recently called you the singing journalist. Why is that?
I'm sure I'm not the. I'm sure I'm just one of many.
That's what they said. I'm going by what they said. Fact.
Well, it's because I make regular guest appearances with a band called Pink Martini. And for almost 10 years now, I've been dropping in. The lead singer of the band is a woman, but I make guest
Storm
appearances.
Large.
And Storm Large and also China Forbes. They both take shifts as the lead singer. China has been with the band from the very beginning. 23 years ago, they were founded. And then several years ago, she took a year off to have vocal surgery, and Storm Large stepped in as the lead singer, and now they both sort of alternate tours. So I just joined them at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in Brooklyn.
I saw that you quit the party there.
Oh, it was amazing.
Sorry,
there were so many people on stage with us. But I guess that's why Out Magazine referred to me as the singing journalist. But I should put in a plug. I recently created a solo show, like a cabaret. And I did it in D.C. and as kind of an experiment, and it went really well. So I'm bringing it to Joe's Pub in Manhattan on Sunday, August 13th, and tickets are now on sale.
Why are you calling it Homeward?
It comes from one of the songs in the show. The song is Flower of Scotland, which is kind of the unofficial Scottish national anthem. And in the show, I try to tease out lessons of how to get through difficult things, resilience and perspective. And I tease out those lessons by telling some of the stories of places I've been and people that I've met in my reporting, whether that is, you know, Iraq in a village that was just reclaimed from ISIS, or the coast of Turkey where Syrian refugees are piling onto rafts, or Ukraine where people were protesting in the Maidan, the main square. I realized that in all of these places, there has always been a soundtrack. And so as I was putting this show together, I got in touch with people who I met in all of those places. And I said, you know, what were people singing in Kiev during these protests? Or when people were on these crowded rafts, what was in their earbuds? You know, what were they listening to? And so the show has about 10 songs in 6 different languages. And I sort of have this through line. And I knew from the beginning when I started thinking about it that I wanted to end with some kind of an American moment. And so this idea of Homeward sort of pulls that together.
Ari will be at Joe's Pub on Sunday, August 13th.
That's right.
And Joe's Pub is in New York City. And here are some of the reviews. Who knew he could sing, the Washington Post says. If he does want to quit that day job, he'll do just fine. He also, you've had to see these, come on. He defies all we hear about the ugliness of radio people. GQ said that.
GQ. So, I have a friend here at work who refers to me as GQ, lovingly and mockingly. Hi, this is Ari Shapiro, and you're listening to Stage Notes with Robert Hammond.
My dear Maria, I'm here to see you. Won't you please, please open the door? I brought you flowers, been waiting hours, can't stand it anymore. So here's what happened when you were napping. I just went out for a snack. I was feeling famished and then I vanished. But now I'm back.
Now he's back. Had a snack. Now he's back.
My heart is burning for that love of ours. That sea of stars, let me in so I can prove to you that no one else can love you, girl, the way that I do. Oh, how I miss ya, I wanna kiss ya, and hold you close from dusk until dawn. So let's just make up, and when you wake up, I promise not to be gone. You know I love ya, dream only of ya, so please, please cut me some slack. I went away just a couple of days, but now I'm back.
Now he's back. Cut his slack. Now he's back.
Shiver!
Mm-hmm. guess that maybe you're still a little angry with me. But it's getting late and my boys are waiting. Gotta get something to eat. Better go now, hope you know now. I love you, that is a fact. Gotta hurry, but don't you worry, babe, 'cause I'll be back.
He'll be back. It's a fact.
Trust me, babe.
He'll be back.
This time I mean.
It's a fact.
Look, the guys are waiting in the car. I gotta go.
He'll be back.
Hey,
it's a fact.
You don't have any cash, do you?
Don't attack.
You know, just a 20 or something.
It's a fact.
Look, if you don't want to see me, you can slip it under the door.
He'll be back. It's a fact.
Can I get you anything?
He'll be back.
I'll be back.
It's a fact.
You'll see.
He'll be back. It's a fact. He'll be back.
My guest today in the program, Mr. Ari Shapiro, a host on All Things Considered, singing with Pink Martini, But Now I'm Back. And I'd like to thank Ari for being part of this special edition of Stage Notes in recognition of LGBT Pride Month. From the bottom of my heart, thank you very much, Mr. Ari Shapiro. And a perfect song to close out the program, You'll Be Found, from Dear Evan Hansen.
Have you ever felt like nobody was there? Have you ever felt forgotten in the middle of nowhere? Have you ever felt like you could disappear? Like you could fall and no one would hear? Well, let that lonely feeling wash away. Maybe there's a reason to believe you'll be okay. 'Cause when you don't feel strong enough to stand, if you can reach, reach out your hand. And oh, someone will come running, and I know they'll take you home. Even when the dark comes crashing through, when you need a friend to carry you, and when you're broken on the ground, you will be found. So let the sun come streaming in, 'cause you'll reach up and you'll rise again. Lift your head and look around. You will be found. You will be found. You will be found. You will be found. You will be found.
Have you seen this? Someone put a video of your speech online.
My speech?
People started sharing it, I guess. And now, I mean, Connor is
your
everywhere.
Speech is everywhere. This morning, the Connor Project page, it only had 56 people following.
Well, how many does it have now?
4,582,239.
I don't understand. What happened?
You did. There's a place where we don't have to feel unknown.
Oh, my God. Everybody needs to see this.
Every time that you call.
If you only say the word,
take 5 minutes.
This will make your day.
From across the silence, your voice is heard.
Share it with the people you love. Repost.
The world needs to hear this.
A beautiful tribute.
Favorite. I know someone who really needed to hear this today. So thank you, Evan Hansen, for doing what you're doing.
I never met you, Connor, but coming out here, reading everyone's posts, it's so easy to feel alone. But Evan is exactly right. We're not alone. None of us.
We're not alone. None of us.
None of us are alone.
Like. Well,
especially now, with everything you hear in the news.
Like, share.
Repost.
Thank you, Evan Hansen, for giving us a space to remember Connor.
To be together.
To find each other.
Sending prayers from Michigan.
Vermont.
Tampa.
Sacramento.
Thank you, Evan Hansen.
Repost. Thank you, Evan Hansen.
Thank you.
The sun comes streaming in, 'cause you'll reach up and you'll rise again.
found.
The musical that I think is going to win for Best Musical, Dear Evan Hansen, that was You'll Be Found. I hope you enjoy the Tony Awards tomorrow night.
And on the clear day, on the clear day, you can see forever and ever and ever and ever.
Thanks so much for listening to Stage Notes today. Remember to follow the program on Twitter @StageNotes. Should you want to email me, you may do so directly, StageNotes@WXXI.org. StageNotes@WXXI.org. I'm Robert Hammond. Have a great day.